All right. Good morning, everyone. I guess we've reached quorum. All right. Let's call the meeting to order once Mr. Hoyle sits down. All right. All right, Caitlin. Do you want to go over meeting procedures?
Yes, I will provide just some brief meeting logistics. So thank you to Delray Yacht Club for hosting us, and we have audiovisual support from AGP staff. Restrooms are down the hall to the left, and we have some water in the back if you need some. If you need to connect to Wi-Fi, the network is WB Public Wi-Fi, and the password is capital P Palawan 1108. This is this meeting is in a hybrid format in which members in the public are participating both remotely and in person. If you need any technical support connecting to or using Zoom, please email it@agpvideo.com. And in order to provide public comment, you must be in Zoom or in the meeting room. And if you're in person and have not indicated you'd like to speak already, we have speaker cards, and you can provide them to myself or Luke. And if you're joining over Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually when we reach the item you'd like to speak under. If you're calling over the phone, dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so we ask that you please speak clearly. And for our members, please remember to turn on your microphone when you speak and turn it off when you've finished. And that'll conclude logistics. I recommend we move to roll call attendance.
All right, great. Thank you, Caitlin. Let's do roll call attendance.
Okay, I will call members in alphabetical order by last name. Tom Ford.
Present.
Tracy Laverick.
Present.
Karen Mogis.
Present.
Emily Parker.
Present.
Michael Quill.
Present.
Martha Tremblay.
Present.
And Erica Yelensky.
Good morning. Present.
Okay, that'll conclude attendance. I recommend we move to item one.
Thank you, Caitlin. First item is comments from members of the public on items that are not on the agenda. And I believe we have a couple of
Yes, we received two requests in advance. The first speaker we have is Harris Silver joining us in person and Walter Lamb joining us remotely. Harris, by Harris's request, I will move on to Walter first. Walter, give me one moment to share your video. You should be able to unmute yourself. Okay, share sound. Oops. Sorry, 1 second. That did not work. Maybe I can make it bigger. Okay, Walter, I'm ready to play your video whenever you're ready.
My comments today focus on US EPA's written official guidance to national estuary programs as amended by the Trump administration on March 17th of this year. The guidance expressly references ocean acidification as a stressor of estuaries across the country. It expressly references climate change. And contrary to what's been said, it's not an internal document. One of the primary purposes of the document is to help NEPs with the course of their work, including development of work plans, and I'm not sure if the video is playing. It seems stuck there. if it could go on to the next bit, that would be great. Commission staff was aware of the existence of this guidance, and it appears to us that Commission staff, Bay Foundation staff, and EPA staff all made a deliberate calculation to withhold this guidance from decision makers, meaning the governing board. So there's the reference to ocean acidification, there's the reference to climate change, and I think had this been disclosed to the board members, it would have solved a lot of confusion, which was clear in the meeting, and we will get to those points right now. And this is a big concern for us. It's not an issue.
It's actually with regard to ocean acidification, hypoxia, we don't know if that phrasing will be allowed, or we just don't know.
I just had a question on acidification. Sorry to go back a little bit, just because I'm a little confused on that one. The NOAA recognizes this, has pages dedicated to it. It's a term that literally just means like the decrease of pH. I'm just a little, if the EPA can provide guidance as to why that scientific term would be potentially rejected.
Yeah, I'll defer to Erica on that.
Yeah, I'm here. Great question. This is based on potential like verbal guidance we've received. I don't have more at this point. You're right. It appears on websites, but I don't have a different, more explicit answer to give you.
And so to be clear, EPA did have more to give. It was the written guidance that expressly showed ocean acidification and climate change. So that was available at the time that these comments and questions were made.
Those specific words should not be in this document anywhere. Is that what we were being advised from the EPA?
Yes, the EPA has indicated that there are certain words that might result in the work plan getting returned to us.
And that would be climate change and environmental justice or something like that?
Yeah, and I would say that we have not received any written guidance, so we don't have a specific list of words.
So did she verbally, though, give us a list of words that should not appear in the document? Is that what was given to us? Or
Yeah.
And so
that's accurate.
This has been changed to remove those words?
Yeah.
Executive committee, get a copy of the executive order. We don't have that today, but I'm just wondering.
I apologize. We did not distribute a copy of the executive order.
So we're assuming the executive order says something like, though, if those words are in it, then it's not getting approved. That's essentially what that executive.
We've received guidance from the US EPA, responsive to the executive orders. We weren't tasked with interpreting the executive orders.
And we haven't received any legal opinions regarding this from the Attorney General or anything else regarding whether it has to be removed or not.
No, we have not.
All right, my time is done.
Thank you, Walter.
Okay, the next speaker we have is Harris Silver. Yeah, please. Well, you'll have to turn on the microphone so those joining online will be able to hear you, and we'll share your timer in just a minute.
How much time do I have?
4 minutes.
Okay. So first of all, thank you for allowing me to speak. I didn't come with a prepared talk. I came to observe what was going on, and I have to say it's shocking to me that I'm the only member of the public here for a meeting on this. So I don't know if that's by design or something else, because I know a lot of people in the city care about the ocean. I hope I don't come off as too provocative by telling the truth, but I've become a little bit of an accidental voice since the fires in ocean issues. I think there's, you know, I don't know how many people here in the room have been in the burn zone between Topanga and Carbon Canyon. Could I see a show of hands here? Anyone? Okay, yeah. So there's approximately 327 what used to be homes that are, sorry about that, that are lying as piles of debris, toxic debris, and they've been, sorry about that, they've been, with every high tide and every rain, they've just been pouring toxins into the ocean. And so we have an organization here that is supposed to represent the public, and they clearly don't. So this is an issue that needs to be stated. So Heal the Bay, which calls itself the watchdog of ocean pollution, has been a lapdog for the polluters, and they haven't said one thing publicly about the need to clean this up quicker. And so I don't know if it's an organizational issue, but I don't think they represent the public, and that just needs to be stated. But I think the bigger opportunity for the entire ocean community is to preserve and restore this 10 miles of land to back to the ocean. And I think every environmental organization needs to come out for this. And the reason is if they don't, what you are going to be saying is that you want to have hundreds of homes rebuilt in the intertidal zone. And I think this is a absolutely essential issue for the ocean community, is to preserve this and work on this. I'm working with a group of people that envisions a park, a linear park from Santa Monica to Malibu, and it starts with preserving the intertidal zone and then moves to a botanical corridor next to a reimagined PCH. But I think, look, I think everyone cares about the ocean, but the fact that there's no one here says so much, and the fact that none of the environmental groups have come out for no rebuilding, and the one group that's supposed to be a watchdog and is listed here in your organization as basically representing the public clearly doesn't represent the public. And again, I've become a completely accidental voice in ocean issues, but since, and I haven't been, I mean, I live my life intentionally off of social media, but I've had over 30 million people see my posts on the ocean since the fires, and I could tell you there's not apathy about the ocean, but what there really is there's a disconnect between all of these organizations and how it serves the public. And so I hope that this doesn't come off as too provocative, but, you know, sometimes saying the truth is offensive, and my point isn't to offend anyone, but just to sort of call it the way it is. And I really think the big issue here is Heal the Bay is kind of the most amazing name ever, and it has so much mindset for people, but I don't think people realize that they're not working to heal the Bay and that they don't represent the public. So that's where I'm at with this. And I also think for everyone, the most important issue for the city, and I know it's so complicated because of everything going on, but is to basically for everyone to come together and work as hard to preserve this 10 miles of coast for the city. And here's the thing, if we could do it for Los Angeles, and something good needs to come out of the ashes, right? Like, let it be this. But if we could do this for Los Angeles, it's a model for coastal preservation around the world. So I'm just going to leave on that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. So that we're done with public comment this time? Okay.
Yes, there's no other requests for comment.
All right, thank you. So next,
excuse me, Erica Yelensky has her hand raised.
Okay, Erica.
I'm sorry, this just the sound is very garbled and I couldn't find the contact information for AGP. I logged off and logged back on. I don't know if it's that way for anybody else online. If it's just me, then I'll figure it out.
Is anyone else?
This is Eric Gilman. I'm also having a similar problem. It's garbled. I did the same thing. I signed off and signed back in. It was still garbled, but maybe that's changed.
And you sound fine to me, Eric. It's just the room.
And you sound fine to me.
Great. Okay. Thank you for confirming.
Yeah, you this sound is fine to us too, but I guess we'll.
This is, sorry. Yes, this is Tracy Leverick. I'm having the same issue. The sound from the people online is clear, but any sound coming from the room appears to be garbled.
Perhaps we should pause for a minute so our AV staff can try to.
Okay. We'll resume in a minute here. Thank you all. Thank you for your patience. Okay, well, let's go ahead and resume. So the next item of the agenda is 2A, the order of the agenda. There's no... Sorry. Okay, it's... So at this time, there are no changes that are proposed by staff on the order of the agenda items. Anyone has any? No, we're good? Okay.
Oh, I just wanted to note that we had Jacob Berman join during public comment. And then I also neglected to call member Gloria Gray, who's joining us over the phone. So apologies for that.
Okay, welcome. So moving on our agenda. That's good. I don't hear an echo, so I think we've made progress here. Are the reports from the administrative director, Luke?
Thank you, Chair. I have a brief update for you all today. In April, the governing board passed Resolution 2502 to provide support for Los Angeles County's Coastal Resilience Initiative. And I believe the day prior or the day, yeah, I think it was the day prior, there was a public information session on that initiative. So I recommend folks check out the county webpage on that project because there are updates to it. So that resolution was adopted by the governing board, and since the meeting, staff forwarded that resolution along with a letter from Chair Tremblay to LA County Board of Supervisors. On April 28th, a technical advisory committee meeting was held at Loyola Marymount University. TAC Chair Dan Pondella provided a presentation on Occidental College's Prop 50 project, surveying nearshore rocky reef habitats. Dr. Rochelle Tanner provided a presentation on the latest research on communicating science to the public. And I'll actually touch on that more later in the meeting. The TAC also discussed ways to improve the draft State of the Bay report. So again, I'll touch on that later as well. At the governing board meeting next month, we will hopefully have either Chair Pondella or myself provide a update. And finally, since the last meeting, commission staff have worked with the Bay Foundation to complete the semi-annual report for the National Estuary Program, which was submitted to the USEPA on April 30th. So thank you all to those who submitted for that report. Later in this meeting, we will discuss the annual report from last year, which will give you a sense for the type of information that is contained in that semi-annual report. So that concludes my update. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. Any questions from anyone? Jacob?
I actually had a question about the agenda for, so sorry.
Sure.
I was wondering if we could move up the LA County wildfire updates to the start of the top of the agenda. Or I'm assuming that's listed in chronological order. Is that correct?
Yes, that was the order that we were going to discuss those items and potentially schedule them for the governing board meeting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if that could be brought to the top.
Okay, so it looks like the recommendation is to move item 2D and in particular 2D3 before item 2C. Is that accurate?
Before approval of the minutes, or can we do the minutes and then do that right after?
We can do the minutes, and then I just wanted to make sure it's at the top of the of 2D.
Okay, thank you, Jacob. Yeah, I think we can do that, right?
We need a motion and a second.
Oh. Is there a motion?
Oh, I guess so Jacob moved.
Okay, is there a second? I'll second. Can I second? Is there a second? Yeah.
I'll second, but I just want to make sure you understand we're just talking about the agenda for the governing board and not actually having it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, this is because I wanted earlier in the agenda for the governing board meeting.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
I'll second.
Okay. Let me just interject here for a second. This is Eric Gilman, Council. So, Jacob, what you're hoping is to have this item discussed earlier in the meeting that the governing board holds in June. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we don't need to go through a vote. We can just, that's funny. I keep switching back to the podium. We can just indicate that in the discussion and then vote on the establishing the agenda. That's fine.
That's perfectly acceptable to me. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Eric, for helping clarify that. Okay, so let's move on then to, unless anyone has anything else.
Yes, I just wanted to note that we previously, the executive committee previously approved the meeting calendar, but we did not have a venue for November. We did secure a venue. It's at West Hollywood City Council Chambers. So that's the November 20th meeting. It'll be another 10 to 12, and we'll send an updated calendar and calendar holds after the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Caitlin. So with that, let's move on to item 2C, consideration of approval of the March 20 meeting minutes. There's no changes that are proposed from staff. Does anyone have any questions, any revisions at this time for the meeting minutes? No? Okay. So is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move to approve the minute.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Caitlin, can we do a roll call?
Sure. And that was a second by Jacob Berman. Okay. Thank you. Give me 1 second to share my screen. Okay. Jacob Berman.
Yes.
Gloria Gray. You might have to dial *6 to unmute yourself. Okay. I'll return to member Gray. Tracy Lovrick.
Yes.
Karen Mogis.
Gloria Gray, abstain. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. And how would you like to vote on the draft March 20 minutes?
Abstain.
Abstain. Okay, thank you. Karen Mogis.
Yes.
Thank you. Emily Parker.
Yes.
Thank you. Michael Quill.
Yes.
Thank you. And Martha Tremblay.
Yes.
Okay, the March 20 minutes are approved.
Thank you, Caitlin. So now the next item is establishing the June 12 Governing Board meeting agenda. And we've heard from Jacob a change that he's proposing. So now, Luke, do you want to introduce the items and let's start the discussion then?
Yes, so we will start off this item by going over Los Angeles County wildfires updates. I'll actually hand it off to Caitlin to provide that introduction.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. So this presentation was postponed from the April Governing Board meeting due to running out of time. So we scheduled this item in response to the unprecedented wildfires in LA County, including the January Palisades fire in Santa Monica Mountains, which we heard a little bit during public comment. Our plan is to invite our previously scheduled speakers back to provide updates on water quality monitoring. So that's the LA Regional Water Quality Control Board, Division of Drinking Water at the State Water Resources Control Board, and Heal the Bay. And we also have space for one more speaker. So we're thinking of reaching out to another member to see if they're available to provide an update. And this will be based on the feedback that we got from executive committee members at the March meeting when we discussed this item. And we're also excited to hear how this discussion could inform the update to the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, which we're currently undergoing, and potentially considering adding actions or tasks to mitigate and adapt to more frequent and intense wildfires. So we have a lot of ideas for people who could come and speak. So if members would like us to maybe make a series out of this topic, just let us know, and we'll do our best to get that scheduled.
Okay, so I think I know the LA Regional Board has been collecting. There's data. They have there's like a website. They're working with SCORE, right, to kind of help coordinate some of the monitoring and sampling that's going on. And it's great. I know Gila Bay's been doing work, and then I guess Caitlin mentions Division of Drinking Water. So. Since there is room for another speaker, do you guys have any ideas or any thoughts? Or I know Caitlin and Luke have ideas too, but you know, I think if you want to hear their ideas, and then maybe we can identify the fourth.
For Tracy online, I don't want to put you on the spot, but RCD may have some updates that fit under this, so. Yeah, Tracy, you don't need to give us an answer now, but just wanted to, ask if that was potentially a possibility.
Yes, I do think that we could put together something for that.
And can I ask, oh, Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a question. I get frustrated with the water reports, and I was wondering if these will be timely and up to date as opposed to being months old or weeks old. Will they be updated by the time we get around to what comes out at this next meeting?
I will make the request to our speakers that they come with the latest available information. That's the best I could do. It really depends on what they've got available.
I'll hold you to that, Luke. Okay.
Oh, I think sometimes for some of these analyses, a lab turnaround time is pretty significant, and that's why there's always seems like always a lag.
Yeah, there's. There. I mean, there's always a lag. That's why I'm dubious about any kind of water quality reports. But a month or two old is not going to do anybody any good. So, you know, I think we should get up to speed on that. We'll put it on Luke.
Yeah, no, I definitely a good point. And, you know, I think if speakers can share the hopefully most recent information and then some of the old, I mean, I would think if you see kind of the timeline in terms of what it was when the first sampling occurred and how things have improved, hopefully that would be great.
Yeah, I can speak to that. Hilda Bay will definitely be sharing the most recent data that we have, but you're absolutely right. The lab turnaround time is our biggest hindrance as far as getting super recent data. So I think the data, that as well cost. So I think the data that we'll have will be as recent as within the last month or two, but we can't make promises beyond that. Yeah.
Okay, great. Any other?
One note.
Yes.
Hi, this is Erica Mielanski. Internet issues, so I'm not turning on my camera right now. Just to note that the week after the June governing board meeting, I think the California Water Quality Monitoring Council is having a 4 or so hour session on just monitoring post-fire. I don't have a link, but I did get, you know, those automatic notices that come out, I'm assuming from the State Water Board. So maybe that's something that can also be shared with members.
I will track down that information and provide it to all of our members, Erica. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. And then, Luke, can I ask how much time were we allotting for this item?
Originally, we were planning on 10-minute updates per speaker. But I think there could be room to expand upon that. And we also want to provide room for questions and comments. So, yeah, we were thinking 10 minutes of update associated with 5 minutes of comment per speaker. So about an hour total.
Okay. Does that sound reasonable to everyone? Okay. All right. Okay, good. Thank you. So if no one has any questions or thoughts on the wildfire item, maybe you can briefly. So this would be the first item on the agenda as proposed by Jacob. And I, just to note for this upcoming board meeting, we would have information items and approval of the minutes. But, I mean, it would basically be mostly comprised of information items. So it's a good opportunity to help us to catch up with. Sometimes we get bogged down with the action items in the business, and, you know, we don't get to hear on some of these important updates. All right. Okay, thanks.
So the next item we're proposing is a presentation on the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program's fiscal year 2024 annual report. So this was another item that was postponed. We originally scheduled it for February, but from February and April, we ran out of time to have the presentation. So we're proposing to bring it back so that we have an opportunity to highlight all of our partners' work in the last fiscal year, which was October 2023 to September 2024. So we know it's a little far in the past now, but still we feel that it's worth it to take the time to celebrate those accomplishments.
Okay, thank you, Caitlin. Any questions on that item? Okay. All right, so the next item was the Pure Water Los Angeles presentation. Luke?
Yeah, thank you. So the third item proposed for June, the June Governing Board meeting, is an update from Pure Water Los Angeles. In 2019, the city of Los Angeles launched an initiative to recycle the city's wastewater, which has been named Pure Water LA. Los Angeles Departments of Water and Power and Sanitation and Environment were tasked with carrying out that initiative. The current goal is to recycle 100% of wastewater from Hyperion Water Reclamation Plant, which would mean 70% of the city of LA's water would come from local sources. Pure Water LA is currently in the process of conducting stakeholder engagement and building preliminary recycling infrastructure at the Hyperion plant. The program may also begin providing recycled water to Los Angeles International Airport in the near future. Therefore, I recommend inviting Pure Water LA staff to provide program updates, as this effort is directly aligned with Action 21 of the Commission's CCMP. I'll also note that Pure Water LA had a stakeholder outreach event, I believe it was yesterday, and there was some interesting new information that they provided there. So, yeah, I recommend this get added to the agenda.
Great. Thank you, Luke. Any questions, thoughts? Okay. All right. So then these are the items that are being proposed for the June 12 Governing Board meeting. And along with Jacob's recommendation to move the wildfire item, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
All right. Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. Caitlin, can we do roll call vote, please?
Yes. Okay, Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Gloria Gray? Okay, I will come back to Member Gray. Tracy Lavrick?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Member Gray, was that a yes?
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you. And Karen Mogis?
Yes.
Emily Parker?
Yes.
Michael Quill.
Yes.
Martha Tremblay.
Yes.
Thank you. The June Governing Board meeting agenda is approved.
Thank you, Caitlin. So the next item on the agenda is 2E, a State of the Bay Report update. Luke?
Thank you, Chair. So now that we've established the Governing Board agenda, it is time for us to have some executive committee discussion. First, what I will share with you all is some updates on the State of the Bay report. This report has been a long time coming, and we are finally at the point where we will have some updates. So just wanted to share with you the progress that we're making on the State of the Bay report. Many of you may not know what this report is, so I'll provide some background information. The State of the Bay report is a comprehensive assessment of environmental conditions and trends in Santa Monica Bay. This report has been released every 5 to 6 years, going back to 1988. And creating this report is a core function of the Technical Advisory Committee. This is the main thing that they do. And the last report was released in 2015, so we are a little bit overdue for this report. So very excited to finally be making some progress on this report. To continue on the background information, this report focuses on the extent, condition, and stressors for seven habitat types. And what a stressor is a threat or a disturbance or something causing harm to a habitat. So this report focuses on the current environmental health of these seven habitat types, which include coastal wetlands, rocky reefs, soft bottom habitats, freshwater habitats, the rocky intertidal zone, the pelagic zone, as well as sandy shores. And I'll pause there just to make sure everybody's brought up to speed and understands what this report is. Everybody good? So in order to create the habitat assessments, each TAC member is assigned one of these habitats. They're kind of the lead on the habitat, and then they assemble a group of experts. Generally, it's another TAC member or two, as well as some outside experts in that field that are not associated with the TAC. So this group of experts gets together, identifies indicators or the available and relevant data with which to assess the habitat health. And then that group of experts scores that data using an agreed upon criteria. So they look at the data and they let us know what the current extent of the habitat is, what its current condition is, and what are the threats to that habitat. And they let us know if that habitat is getting worse or better or staying the same. I don't want you to focus on understanding what is displayed on this slide. This is a snippet from the 2015 State of the Bay report. This is how results were displayed in that report. So this is how we were conveying the information that those experts agreed upon. And the takeaway message for this slide is that this is a confusing way to show this data. There is a better way. And this is something we are trying to improve upon for the next iteration of the report. This is only one component of that report. There was a narrative component to the 2015 report. But we think that summarizing it and the visuals that we provided in the last report could be improved upon. So in order to do that, staff have been working on a new template for the report that we can provide to our TAC members and ensure that they generate something that's easily understood. So the goals we're trying to accomplish with this template are to streamline the habitat assessment process. I'm not going to dive into details on that, but there are just there were things that could be tightened up there in terms of scoring and in terms of the instructions that we provided to our TAC members and experts. So the template streamlines some of the process there. And the other goal is to make the results more easily understood, improve upon that table that I just presented. So staff have been working with the Prop 50 wetland team, which is headed by SCWRP. And the reason we've teamed up with them on this is they will be the first ones to write a section for the State of the Bay report. I will provide more details on that later, but later this year they will be the first ones to release their section, so it just made sense to work with them. We have also been working with TAC member Dr. Rochelle Tanner from Chapman University, who has provided recommendations for communicating with the public. And Dr. Tanner has provided us with some very good feedback, which I'd actually like to share a little bit of that with you today. I think it's of interest, and it's also something you might be able to take back to your organizations. So Dr. Tanner provided a presentation at the April 28th TAC meeting, as well as a presentation to commission staff on ways to improve upon the 2015 State of the Bay report. And I've summarized the recommendations here, and I'll walk you through it. So Dr. Tanner's first recommendation was to incorporate storytelling into the document as much as possible, especially if the document will be provided to the public, which it will. So storytelling facilitates greater information retention amongst the public. So if we could tell the story of each of these habitats, how they've changed over time, or how the efforts to preserve or rehabilitate those habitats could be told, the story of that, then might grow public support or public interest in those habitats. Visuals are very important for communication, so we need to be conscious of the types of pictures that we use in the report. So it's helpful to have pictures of the habitats and have pictures with people in them. Those help just relate to members of the public. We have to be conscious of the colors we use in the report, so that red to green that we have here in our 2015 report, that is actually advised against. So we need to rethink our color scheme, and Dr. Tanner had plenty of suggestions for that. And then we have to be tactful with our use of text. So we don't want to overwhelm people with text and visuals, but it is helpful to have some text embedded in our visuals. So there are more. This is obviously just a summary. We will be receiving a report from Dr. Tanner, which will have more information. So let me know if you all would like to see that. But just sharing some high-level things here. And then the last recommendation was regarding how to get members of the public engaged. And it seems like hope is the best way to motivate people for long-term behavioral change, according to the research. So it's really important to focus on people's emotions and appeal to people's emotions rather than logic. And hope is kind of the best emotion. So if we are trying to get people engaged with the commission, or if members are trying to get people engaged or volunteers engaged, hope is a good emotion to use. Dr. Tanner also shared some of her own research. And a lot of her research focuses on communications with the public that will spur action. And what Dr. Tanner has found is that action-oriented language that leverages cultural values is most impactful. So if you're able to leverage cultural values and inspire hope in somebody, that will lead to action. And in the United States, the top values that Dr. Tanner has found are protection, stewardship, and responsible management. Those things spur hope in people, apparently. And I have a little tiny section of Dr. Tanner's research. This was a paper in preparation that Dr. Tanner shared at the last TAC meeting. And this is just a tiny little portion of that research. I just wanted to show it here to really illustrate the point. So people responded more favorably to the statement on the left in that box on the bottom left. They responded more favorably to that than the text in the bottom right. So I'll read them aloud. So on the left, it reads, it is our responsibility to be good stewards of our wetlands by managing phragmites. Phragmites are a type of plant. You can see that in that statement, it names responsibility. And in the statement on the right, it says, managing phragmites will help our economy prosper. And that's kind of making an economic appeal to people. And that appeal to be more responsible was actually stronger than appealing to people's fiscal responsibility, if you will. So I thought that was interesting. We will get more information from Dr. Tanner in the future, but just wanted to share a little bit from you today. Any questions or comments on this before I move on?
Yeah, Luke, thanks for that summary. I just wanted to convey that there's been a lot of discourse at the TAC meeting. Ooh, a lot of feedback in the room. Trying to manage what I think is seemingly challenging. Let's try. Maybe that one's better. A little better, yeah. trying to produce a document that is technically rigorous, reflects the rigor of the science that has been conducted, as well as the thinking that has gone into setting up those various stressors and metrics associated with the state of the bay, and then getting that sort of reduced down to something that's also engaging for the public, whom the document and whom
we are all collectively serving. So I just want to acknowledge that the tech's been working very hard on that, as well as the staff, trying to figure out exactly how we get that done. I suspect that some of the changes that Luke was speaking to are going to be represented in the final products of this. The last time we produced this, now 10 years ago, it was a big PDF slap dab on the website, published and printed out a bunch of them, etc. We do have a dedicated page on smbnep.org now for the State of the Bay. We've been working on ways to get this information out there, and I think that there'll be a lot of technical resources as well as this more public friendly synopsis quick infographic that should hopefully get folks oriented to what we're trying to accomplish. And I think as for the hope piece of this, is that part of those seven habitats that Luke had shared, where those are the ways that our TAC had said, well, right, these are key habitats. We understand something of the community dynamics associated with those habitats, physical, chemical, and biological things that influence them, and our investments through the National Estuary Program and the partnership at large can be measured in improvements in those habitats. So that's just wanted to make sure that that was explicit. I know we've got some folks that haven't been around this table as long as some of us. Just wanted to add that on. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Jacob?
I just wanted to, first, agree with everything Tom said, except for not trying to reduce feedback. We usually want more feedback, but I just also wanted
to add dad jokes to the categories.
Had to add some levity in addition to hope. But as someone who's colorblind, I appreciate the focus on making it accessible and easy to access for a wide spectrum of folks. A lot of times I just have to kind of grin as I'm looking at like a map or a chart, and that's very color coded, and it's just something that I can't understand. So I do appreciate that. And I want to just highlight that it is a real problem for some folks. So, and there's many other aspects that we are, it sounds like we're looking at to make sure that this is going to be, easily digestible to the general public. And that's super important for the education, for the work, and for getting more support for this cause.
Great. Thank you, Jacob. Any other thoughts, comments, Emily?
Yeah, if I may, I love that this discussion is focusing so much on the communication aspects and making this data accessible. And I'm curious if there has been either conversations with Dr. Tanner or within the TAC about what the distribution methods will look like for the report. You mentioned, this last one, it was just a PDF that kind of got thrown out there. And so I'm curious if it would potentially look like presentations to other commissions, a social media campaign, like what, there's a lot of different ways to engage the public and share the content of this report.
I think those are all in play, Emily, absolutely. And we think over the past, say, 10 years, to keep this in framework, we have shifted into trying to drive more attention towards social media rather than earned media, running advertisements in the local papers to say, show up at the meeting. Doesn't exactly go as far as it used to. But I don't want to shortchange what happened in 2015 either. Had a big conference symposium surrounding the release of the State of the Bay report and about 150 attendees. And we had big plenary sessions, and then we broke off into other rooms for folks that were interested in a specific habitat. I think we could also add some project-level type work. Hey, if you want to hear about how we're not just sort of monitoring and paying attention or observing what's happening to this one habitat type, here are very appreciably the efforts that are being undertaken to actively manage the improvement of water quality, a habitat type, its extent, its condition, etc. As we get closer to those dates, we'll start to put a finer point on that, but I very much appreciate what you're sharing. And congratulations on not dropping a joke in there or something.
Thanks, Tom.
Anytime we can get a one-liner in there, Jacob, it's good. I you brought up the symposium. I can't. It's been 10 years. Jeez, Louise, there that went. Is there any kind? That was just an incredible event, especially for me. I learned a lot there. Is there anything around that going on with this release, or has that gone bye-bye? We haven't gotten there yet, Quill.
So can I ask, I actually remember the symposium. I was there, actually. So what is the timeline in terms of the report being ready?
I have a slide for that. If that's all right, I will share now. So this report is being done a little differently. The TAC members have decided... I'll start here. So for Prop 50, a lot of those projects, or all of the research projects that we are funding with Prop 50 money, are filling knowledge gaps that we had. So we have projects looking at rocky intertidal ecosystems, soft bottom habitat. So it was important for the TAC members to conclude those projects before the corresponding State of the Bay section was completed, just so there was the latest information. So the TAC has actually decided to release the report section by section. As you can see here, we have a target release date for each State of the Bay section or each habitat, as well as the tentative leads and co-authors. And these correspond with those target dates correspond with the end of those Prop 50 projects, if that makes sense. So first, coastal wetlands will be released. Then spring 2026 or early summer 2026, we'll have Rocky Reef and so on and so forth. Some of these Prop 50 projects may also get extended. So this is also subject to change. So it will not be a case where there is one big report released all at once.
So is the idea once all the work is done, I mean, there's some findings already in place, but I guess some comprehensive review or overall finding. I know these are all different types of habitats, but there is some connectivity between. So I would assume that at the end there would be some, once all the work is done for this time period, there'll be some sort of assessment of where we are, the state of the whole bay.
Yeah, that sounds like a good discussion item for the TAC. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
Mic number three. Ooh, that one's good. That one's nice. Sound like I'm on the stage in Vegas. Yeah, Martha, I think you bring up a very fair point, and I think that is yet to be resolved. Some of what was a challenge in 2015, and I think that our program faces this, that over the 30 years that we've been doing this work, our need for information as well as the diversity of efforts that are being that are in play that generate information to help us understand what we're doing to adaptively manage to improve, make this a far larger effort than we're able to sort of buoy all at once. So that serial investment in those habitat projects through Prop 50 were to address what was often a shortcoming in resources to do the monitoring that we need to get the information done. This is our first shot at this. I think it's got some very solid concepts beneath it. At what point in time do we say, all right, we got five out of seven. So we're happy and we want to now do a synthesis piece on that, because the interrelatedness is obviously very clear to our technical committees, and I think something that needs to be stressed with the public as well, that, you know, what happens along the beach impacts the near shore Rocky Reef community or the Sandy Shore. And I think that's extremely valuable information for folks to get. So we're going to have to figure that one out.
Okay, and then I don't want to add another one, but please. I know it's on my mind in terms of now how the wildfires and the impacts associated with that have affected the state of the Bay. And I know we're still collecting data, right? So I think, you know, if we release something like this, the public might be looking for that type of information. And I know some of the work has been done and some is still the work that's coming up, at least there'll be an opportunity there to make those assessments. But the work that's been done, is there some thought there?
Do you want me to try to swing at that, Luke? And I'll leave it up for edification. So because we do have these periodic disturbances or periodic accomplishments, and we don't want to perhaps waylay the sharing of that information or being able to get it out. So in addition to these habitat chapters, which are intended to follow the CMP and require all of this specified analysis and results, we also have created a window for habitat highlights to be something that, you know, if there is a summary report coming out about the water quality issues, you know, from the wildfires, that, you know, we can drop in place and say, hey, you know, here's what was happening on the beach, here's the data that show it, here's some of the results, here's the scale scope of what was done. I think that those, I hope that's not too cursory an example for me to provide for you, but we were trying to make sure that we had those opportunities to get those updates out there and share that technical information that way.
Yeah, just briefly, and I just wanted to say Erica's hand is raised, but just briefly, some of the Prop 50 projects will be measuring impacts of the fire just inherently. One example is the freshwater habitat project we have going on with Pepperdine University. They're going out in the burn area. They have some project locations in the burn area, so they'll be going out and collecting data soon. So for some folks, it's covered. For other folks, I can ask them to address that in their sections.
Okay, thank you, Luke. Anything else on this item? Yeah. Oh, you said Erica had her hand up?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Oh, it's kind of low.
Can you try again, Erica? It's very faint.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Give us 1 second.
Okay.
I think they're adjusting the volume for the room.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I think we're...
Did I try again? I can hear my voice on your end, so hopefully you can hear.
You're good, Erica.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now I'm really loud. All right, thank you. Sorry, I distracted myself from my question. So I'm really glad that, so a couple of things. One, I'm glad, Tom, thank you for bringing up the habitat highlights, because I think those are already online. So there are some, and maybe we could... I don't know if you have a screenshot of that, Luke, or could share it with the notes, because I think it's worth, it's good visuals and folks can check out what is on there already. And I think that's good information to share. And then on the kind of monitoring and what we know from the fires, I'm glad you, thank you for asking that, Martha. I wonder if we can also look to others and link to others, like the California Water Quality Monitoring Council meeting that's coming up in June. I wonder if they're going to have a synopsis, or if we can lean on, you know, some of our partners to bring that in. I know that some of the, like Luke said, some of the Prop 50 projects will kind of, fire impacts will be inherently part of their project because of the timeline of their project, but maybe it's something to just at least linking to bring it in, that the TAC doesn't need to start a new project. Hopefully I'm making sense. And then the last thing is I want to thank, you know, commission staff and the Bay Foundation for reaching out to others to on how to, I mean, I think we all, communication and how to communicate with the public is a challenge for all of us in government. So I appreciate you looking to other sources. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Erica. Anything else?
Just to respond to one thing Erica said, yeah, sorry, I don't have slides showing the habitat highlights, Erica, but they are on the National Estuary Program, the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program website, and I can send those links out after the meeting. And we don't have habitat highlights up for each habitat yet, but we are still working on those. So we have a few done. I'll share those after the meeting.
Thank you, Luke. So we're ready to move on to the next item, and that's discussion on the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program Comprehensive, the CCMP. Luke?
Thank you. You're going to be hearing from me again. So this is our other discussion item for the meeting today, and we are continuing our discussion from the last meeting. There we go. Okay, so we are continuing our discussion from the last meeting on the CCMP. And just to give you a recap of the last discussion we had, I came to the executive committee in March and asked what our process should be for reviewing and considering comments that we've received on the CCMP. And what the consensus was that staff should review the comments and look at the nature of each of those comments and then place them into categories, which I have attempted to do here today. And hopefully it is what you all had in mind. And just to give you another reminder of the comments that we are considering, staff have received these comments over the last 5 years. And in total, there's 475. That is a bigger number than I reported in March. That is because I had not added the 2025 public comments to the total. So from 2021 to now, we've received 475 public comments. Those were in written form. They were provided at meetings during public comment periods and provided at workshops. So it's a lot of comments. We've sifted through them, considered the nature of each of those, and placed them into categories. But before I get to those categories, I thought it might be useful to summarize the comments this way or just give you a sense of what folks were commenting on. I apologize if this is too small. Can folks in the room see this? Okay, so again, these aren't the categories. This isn't what the discussion will be on, just showing you for your own reference. These are all the comments that received a number of comments in the double digits, so greater than 10. You could see action 13 received the most amount, action 32, reducing marine debris, action 21, that's our action about recycled water. Restoring dunes and sandy shores is another. Reduce swimming and seafood health risks, as well as support for marine protected areas and fisheries. So I also have to stress that this is like the raw total of comments. Some folks commented multiple times over the course of the years, so this does not take that into account. It's just total number. Here are all of the actions that received anywhere from 5 to 9 comments, kind of like a medium level of comments, one per year, if you will, at least. So developing a regional sediment management plan had a lot of comments associated with it. Same with restoring kelp forests, restoring small coastal lagoons, artificial reefs, enhancing endangered and threatened species populations, support for nature-based runoff capture, as well as support for safe clean water program, and then finally ridge dam removal. All received a medium number of comments. And then finally, 22 actions in the CCMP received 1 to 4 comments, or fewer than one per year, and 8 actions received 0 comments. So in total, 30 or 68% of our total actions received a low number of comments. But I have a grain of salt I want you all to consider here. A lot of these comments were multifaceted, and I was placing them in one bin, one action. So although they some of these comments could have fit under multiple actions. So that is a grain of salt here. Also, some of these actions are similar. They are very related. Here, if you look at action 17 and action 43, they're next to each other towards the bottom of this table. Those are very similar. So that's another thing to take into account here. I was placing things in one bin versus another, especially if there were, you know, similar actions that it could have gone either way sometimes. I'll pause here in case anybody has anything to comment on before I move on. No? Any surprises? No? Okay. Okay, now for our category. So staff reviewed the nature of all of the comments and placed them into the following categories. And I will explain these. I'll explain the first one on a separate slide, but the not actionable category received the most number of comments. So I'll explain what that means later, but it's about half we're actually not able to act on. So there were 81 comments associated with a modification to an existing action or next step in the CCMP. 68 folks were in support of increased outreach and engagement efforts. There were 37 ideas for a new action in the CCMP. 30 calls for support for tribal engagement and collaboration. There were 18 recommendations to edit the document. Those are like word changes, typos, minor corrections. 11 new next steps. So those are kind of sub actions below each action. So those were activities that fit under an existing action, but would be a new effort. 7 recommendations for a collaboration, a new collaboration that was not in the CCMP, and then 1 call to remove an action or next step. I will not be able to go through each of these categories today. This will have to be spread out amongst multiple meetings. So today I'm only going to focus on a few of these. First, I want to discuss the not actionable category to explain this a little bit more. Again, almost half of the comments fell under this category. And the good news is that we received a lot of support for work that is already being done. And in quotations under that first bullet point, I have a verbatim comment that we received that is representative of this type of comment. So protect kelp forests, that is action 2 of the CCMP. That is something currently being done. So there's no action to, or the, you know, it's just continue to do what you are doing is the message for a lot of those actions or a lot of those comments. Next, there were some comments that lacked sufficient detail. So, you know, it was clear that the comment was related to work we did. However, it was difficult to ascertain what was being asked of the commission. So I have an example there. I'll read it. Again, this is verbatim. Atmospheric rivers, the flow of water directly impacts the beach. So here, this person is alluding to climate factors, extreme weather, referring to polluted runoff and impacts on the beach, but it is unclear what we should be doing here. It's not very actionable. And then finally, we categorized some of these items as not applicable to the CCMP, and the example here is Santa Monica Bay is not an estuary, so that's maybe a comment concern, But yeah, it's not something that we can really act upon for the CCMP updates. So there were some of those comments, maybe a criticism of the commission fell under this category as well. So any comments on this or concerns?
I just want to say that the your report does not lack sufficient details, Luke. I must say, I'm just like really well done and very thorough.
Okay, thank you. And I do want to make sure we are careful with this because it is half of the comments. So if folks do want to see the comments, we have provided them online previously. But if you need to see them again, we'd be happy to show them to you. For our discussion today, I wanted to focus on two of the categories that I've highlighted here in a red box. Those are support for increased outreach and engagement and support for tribal engagement and collaboration. I'm grouping these together because these have been topics that we've discussed over the last 2 years. And they both have to do with engagement. So if you combine them, they would be the second largest category we have here. So, I have some discussion questions for you regarding these, starting with the tribal engagement category. I've summarized the comments that we've received into these three bullet points. They all kind of fell under these three themes. So some of the comments were recommendations to build relationships with tribes and help build capacity so that they can participate with the commission. There were calls to incorporate indigenous knowledge into CCMP projects. And finally, recommendations to develop a land acknowledgement and to acknowledge indigenous names wherever possible in commission documents as well as project sites. So these were the three themes that had to do with tribal engagement. And I have two questions to discuss. The first question I have for you all is regarding work that is already being conducted. Our commission has a lot of members, a lot of different folks coming to the table, and a lot of those members are already conducting tribal engagement. I'll use the Regional Water Quality Control Board as an example. So those efforts are not currently being captured in the CCMP. How should we make sure that those are included there? I will say it, staff do try to stay up to date with members on their current projects for the annual report. So how do we capture these tribal engagement efforts already being conducted? That's the first question. What's the best way?
Do you have a recommendation for us?
So I think for... I would need to talk to Tom a little bit more, but Tom was considering reformatting the document to provide more flexibility. And I think tribal engagement is something that is associated with every single action. So maybe we can have something like that, like a tribal engagement section under each action or something. And we can have some updates there that folks provide us periodically for like an annual report, for example. But Tom might have other suggestions.
No, I appreciate that, Luke. I think that from a land acknowledgement standpoint, I'm not familiar with what the state processes for the commission to undertake to feel like that they've got that done. Certainly, I know there's a lot of tribal liaisons who I've interacted with that serve multiple different agencies within the state, and perhaps there's some methodology that they use that I'm not privy to. As for the structure of the document itself and trying to find some efficiencies, and I did not do as much chapter and verse work as Luke did in sharing with you the details on his analysis of the comments we've received. But there is a lot of confusion in the way that the document is currently structured. We have actions that say, hey, let's restore or protect this. And then we have actions that say, hey, let's monitor this habitat. And then we have actions that say, hey, let's assess and restore this area, habitat, section of reef, something along those lines. And so I think that there's a lot of cleaning up that needs to be done so that we can not just lay it out plain and smoothly, identify our partners more clearly. I think that there are some universal statements that can be made in the document about whom we try to work with, the relationships that we prioritize, including tribes in this case that could all work in there. It's certainly relatively easier for us, I think, as a nonprofit to have done so. We've got, you know, our land acknowledgement on our webpage. I don't know if I'm getting to your question very specifically at all, Karen, but
no, that's helpful. And I think where you're going is, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of where my brain goes, which is tribal engagement, public engagement, other activities, maybe cross-cutting across the management plan. So it might be useful to have an acknowledgement that this is something that we strive for as a component of all of our management activities. And then, like Luke suggested, have some specifics that are action-specific, tribal engagement, something like that.
So I do think the plan is complicated. It's very comprehensive. So many actions. I know there's this term like everything in the kitchen sink. I think we have it there. Mm-hmm. I do think if we propose to kind of look at it and be more, I would say, more strategic and more updated to the times, we're going to have to do a lot of education to our members and the public in terms of what we're doing, why we're doing it, so that there's no concern that we're just deleting stuff, right? So it's just something to be mindful. Yes, it's very complex, and in terms of timing, in terms of what it ends up looking like, maybe, you know, kind of phase it. But in terms of the outreach and tribal engagement, I agree. A lot of those actions do have their, I know the projects that we're working on, there is some aspect. And I mean, I would, if you guys remind me, or if there's something where it's like, okay, when you're giving us an update on an action, you know, specifically, you know, these are the sorts of things that we're looking for, that would be helpful in having, so that our partners share with us information that, you know, kind of reflects that.
Okay, so yeah, it sounds like we can weave, whenever we do have folks speaking at a meeting, providing an update, we could ask specifically for those tribal engagement pieces to their projects.
Yeah, and if I may volunteer, I would love to, we had started in the fall, we had shared a few sort of conceptual ways to reorganize the CCMP. I think that the impressions that Dr. Tanner's work, which Luke shared earlier, were impactful on everybody in that room, including myself. And I think that we can declutter the entry point into this document to make it clearer to people who we are, what we're trying to accomplish, and to simplify it best we can, and try to sort this out a little bit easier so that not just is it clearer going in, we can track our progress better. We can better clearly show whom we're engaging in the work. And I'd be happy to bring forth a sort of a straw man of that approach for folks in June. And if it gets dismissed, then, you know, fair enough. But I think we need to start somewhere in our conversation as to what makes sense to all of us.
Erica, do you have any thoughts?
In terms of which piece?
In terms of, I think we're talking about this as we go through the a CCMP update, it being really updated to maybe restructured a little bit and maybe some things get consolidated.
I think we learned a lot when we updated it in 2018. And I think that we also have learned a lot over the past several years. And I can hear my echo in the room.
Maybe try again, Erica.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, it's hard for me to talk when I can hear myself. And I realize this is all also being recorded. So I think you're on the right track. I would love to see your straw man, Tom. I think it's for me personally, it's much easier to react to something, you know, on paper. But I think you presented, I can't remember what EC meeting, maybe it was November or January, kind of a more consolidated or integrated way, or approach, I think, to presenting the information. So that things aren't maybe in multiple places within the document. And I'm waving my hands as I'm speaking right now, if you can picture that. So I think we're on the right track, but it's just so much more helpful to have when we have something on paper that we can all look at the same time and discuss. Does that help at all, Martha?
Yes, no, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So this is already, been addressed a little bit during this discussion, but my second discussion question on this topic is specific to commission staff or the Bay Foundation, and we were wondering what tribal engagement activities can SMBRC commit to. Currently, we have not had engagement with tribes, so this is something we'd like to change, and you know, what can commission staff or the Bay Foundation do? I do have recommendations. Should I lead with those? Okay. Commission staff do have the ability to send letters or make phone calls to tribes, so that is something we can do. We can also here. I'll go back to the. Oh, sorry, getting ahead. If you look at the second bullet point here in the themes, incorporating indigenous knowledge into CCMP projects would be another opportunity. So, staff can do outreach and see if there are components of the CCMP that tribes would like to be engaged with in particular. Or we can just send letters introducing ourselves. So that is one action we can take. Also, we can look into what it would take to develop a land acknowledgement, what the best practice for that would be.
And because we're speaking to this subject, thank the Gabrielino Tongva Springs Foundation for the terrific event that they hosted on May 3rd. We were there, the Bay Foundation was there, a number of other organizations, terrific celebration of the Tongva and Gabrielino, people, there and the significance of that site, by the numbers that have been shared with me, it's been inhabited by human beings for at least 7,500 years. To be clear, this organization has approved funding to support their work on that site through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So we're out there removing hardscape, improving natural hydrology, and adding native plants to the landscape. Those folks are making terrific progress on this work, and I think it's an excellent example of how we're not just asking to consult with tribes, but actually making investments in them. And in their work for places that they truly hold culturally significant. So I hope that will serve as an example of a way or a method by which we can continue to expand our tribal engagement.
And sorry, Tom, just to clarify, you were referring to a line item from the work plan. Is that correct?
It was part of the BIL, now IIJA, work plan. Yes.
If I may, I have a thought. This is a little broader than just the CCMP, but forgive my ignorance as this is my first day sitting here. Is there a designated seat on the commission that is specifically for an Indigenous person or a tribal representative? And if not, that may be, something to think about, because that would directly impact, obviously, the CCMP and all the work the commission does. And it's something that, other commissions that I've worked with have done and has led to a lot of success. And then my second comment is that my organization, Heal the Bay, did go through a pretty extensive process in developing our own land acknowledgement. And we'd be happy to share how we went about that with staff if that is a process you want to undertake.
Thank you, Emily. So I think in terms of the seats there, and Eric probably knows this better, and I know that there's some that are specifically identified for certain groups. There are some seats that are open to different. So I think it's something that maybe we can look into.
Yeah, and to answer your question, we do not currently have a designated spot for tribes in our membership, in our MOU. So thank you for pointing that out. That would be great. And thank you for offering to help. Go ahead, Tom.
Sorry, Luke. I can't trust my memory as much as I once did. The funding that has been directed towards supporting the work of the Gabrielino Tongva Springs Foundation was not through the IIJA funds, but it was through State Coastal Conservancy managed funds underneath the Santa Monica Bay Coastal Habitat Restoration Project. Santa Monica Bay Coastal Habitat Restoration Program. I just call it CHIRP for short. But that's where those monies were developed from. So apologies, I just didn't want that to be reflected incorrectly in the record.
There was a work plan line item as well. Is that accurate, Tom?
There is a tribal engagement item in the work plan as well, yes.
I did also want to mention that the last time we updated our Memorandum of Understanding, which outlines our membership, we added eligibility for tribes. They were previously eligible, but it just wasn't clearly stated. So we did that so that in the meantime we could work with tribes and Indigenous organizations to figure out how they'd like to engage. So.
Thank you, Caitlin. That's great. So, Luke, I think you've got some direction and some input.
I've got one more recommendation for you, which is inviting members of local tribes to come and present before the commission, I think is another way to do engagement. One of the things that I've learned in doing tribal engagement myself is that phone calls and letters, while they can be effective, they're not always the most effective tool and can often be an expensive resources that ends up not leading anywhere. And so creating very designated spaces in these commission meetings for tribal representatives to provide updates or also attending spaces where tribes are convening, whether it's a listening session and offering presentations in reverse, are also really effective ways of doing tribal engagement and may work well in the CCMP.
Thank you, Emily. So, Luke, I think you've got some good input and direction for that item.
Yes, thank you, everybody. And moving on, just trying to be conscious of time. We're doing okay. I have one more related category to go over, and that is the outreach and engagement category. And again, I have summarized the nature of these comments. I have the summary on two different slides, so bear with me. There were comments asking to increase engagement with inland communities and environmental justice-focused organizations. There was support for workforce development, especially in underserved communities. Folks asking for public tours of restoration sites or conservation sites. an increased presence in traditional and social media. Folks wanted more information out there in media. Folks wanted more programs, events, and materials focused on youth and recommended partnerships with local schools on restoration projects. And folks asking to make the coast more accessible through field trips and recreation-focused events and programs. So there's a lot there, a lot of great recommendations, and similar to the last discussion question, a lot of our members are currently doing things like this. I will name Nick Gabaldonde at Black Surfers Collective, hosts every year. So a lot of folks already do this. My question was, how do we capture that in the CCMP? Again, this is a component that really wasn't pervasive in the last CCMP. So yeah, how do we make sure that all the outreach and engagement efforts are captured in the CCMP? I think we already got some ideas from it. So I'll ask both questions at once. What recommendations do you have for commission staff or the Bay Foundation to address these comments?
Any thoughts from anyone? I mean, I think there's some similarity here in terms of the tribal being intentional and specifically highlighting, because I think all the work that we do does involve some sort of outreach, right? So I think people are doing it, but it's more maybe creating that visibility for it. The other thing is that there's probably a good opportunity for us to kind of better inform the public what we're doing, who we are, right? I think sometimes people get confused in terms of what we're able to do. So I do think being intentional on outreach and being as clear as possible and being consistent so that people kind of see that could be very helpful for us down the line.
Thanks for that, Martha. I wanted to add, I think there was some conversation when the governing board considered the approval of the FY26 work plan, that some of the language in that work plan might foreshadow directions that the CCMP would also take. And if we look at the language that was added to that work plan, which was taken from the Clean Water Act, Section 320, there is an expressed statement that recreational activities and designated uses in the estuary are protected. And I don't think that that's explicit in our current CCMP in a way that we're going like, yeah, we really do value beach access and swimming and surfing and snorkeling and fishing and sailing. I don't want to leave anybody out. So I think that aside from, you know, making sure that it's in our actions and that it is actionable and intentional, make sure that that's clearly put in the document up front as, hey, these are our priorities. These are the things that we do, I think is very important. I think we've got a great template for it.
I have another specific recommendation. One thing commission staff have not generally done or just done a little bit of is social media. We do have state water boards, social media resources at our disposal to an extent. So I can explore that some more, try and drive some public engagement that way. Just throwing that idea out there.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Agreed.
I just had a comment. Thank you, Tom, for adjusting my volume here. Just being clear about the opportunities that are available would really help me with my outreach and my interactions, especially with environmental justice folks I'm working with, just to get a clear bead. And usually I go through Tom to find out what opportunities there are. But if we could broaden that and I could look at the list of opportunities to offer out, because my way of working is to listen into that community and see what is needed rather than me projecting what I think they should be doing. So if I can have that hit list of opportunities to present and allow those organizations to pick from, that would really be helpful to me. And just
you know, because I can't remember a lot, but if I have it written down, it's really good. And then I pick Tom's brain a lot to find out where we can mesh into things. So
it would be helpful for you to have a list of projects, programs in need of volunteers, collaborators,
just opportunities hires. That we can offer. So I'm not saying, how about this? How about that? And then I go to Tom and say, can you guys do this? Can you guys? But if I know what we have in our basket to offer, and I hear that it'll line up with the opportunities being asked for by these communities, I'm juggling a few different things, and I have limited resources to do that, but certainly working with the commission on this would be beneficial and open up opportunities that I don't even know about yet, working with these groups.
Yeah, I will think about that some more. I think that's there's definitely an opportunity there. Our membership is large, so in theory we could get a lot of opportunities coalesced into one document or thing that folks can then see.
Just a quick example, I'm getting a lot of questions about our inland communities, Title I schools, and environmental justice groups that are really out of the loop on information about what's going on with the algal bloom and all the sea lions that are dying. They want to know what we can do to fix it. That's not me. I mean, I defer to the marine biologists, but to make that connection and certainly having the commission to make those connections, I think would be a big asset. And speaking at those organizations, they're offering space for somebody to come to speak. But if I can have that group to tap, that would be really great to make those connections, get everyone more involved.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. So if you may need somebody to speak to a group of school or youth. Who do you contact on the commission for that? Yeah,
and not even just youth. I mean, the communities are like in the dark about this, you know, and how can we fix it? And I'm like, well, it's a multi-layered thing, as is ocean acidification. You know, that's why I think the expanded explanation we put into the work plan is extremely beneficial to the general public. That just doesn't go with a cliche of ocean acidification. Well, what leads to that? What's led to these blooms? It's so multi-layered, and it can and really develop a new awareness of those communities, how they can get involved, how much what they're doing may be contributing to what feeds the nutrients that feeds the bloom, those kinds of overlapping things. As you can see, I go down that dark hole. But just to have that ask, it's being asked, like, somebody tell us what's going on. We don't understand. I think that's a great effort that the commission can put forth, in addition to the dive programs and those kinds of things that can be offered.
We have some folks online, Erica. And then Tracy.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate you bringing up that specific example, Michael. I do wonder, kind of bringing that up or other examples specifically, even at the governing board meeting, or we have so many organizations. It would be a lot of work to collate everybody's calendars of events, but maybe having people to start. Sometimes people share, hey, this weekend we're doing this, but I'm wondering if organizations around the table know, here's our calendar for the next 3 months. And I don't know. I'm not computer savvy enough or tech savvy enough to know, like, if there's a way to collate that into something more organized, but at least starting to share and maybe having at least PDFs that we could share around, so that when you're with communities and they bring up issues or questions, you have resources, maybe more at your fingertips. Anyway, I don't know if that's helpful or not. Thank you.
Yeah, Erica, and sorry, Tracy, real quick. I think an opportunity might be the administrative director report that I issue for every meeting could be an opportunity for this. I'll need to give more thought to it, though. Tracy, go ahead.
Hi, yes, thank you. Two things to that. First, regarding the SMB, perhaps all of our organizations that are part of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration follow a social media protocol when we're posting about a event that we're going to have coming up. and that we tag your organization so that it's so that you have that central knowledge. I do like the idea of maybe there's a resource calendar that we can all as organizations upload to. And then it would, I don't know that the public's going to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration website as a source for that information, but it might allow us to go to that and be able to, as our colleague here said, share out with particular organizations looking for things and performing that as a resource. And then secondly, as the Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains, we do have a lot of resources in reaching out to communities. And if my colleague there, I can't see your name on the screen, but if you have communities that are in need of speakers or information, please reach out to us separately and we can perhaps work with you. That's all I have.
Great. So it sounds like we could do a better job of tapping into our memberships and using their resources to help advance the CCMP. I'll end with another example. At my previous job at Heal the Bay, I reached out to West Basin, their career development department, and they provided a recruiter who could speak to my interns about finding a job after their internship. So I know a lot of our member organizations have something similar. So I think yeah, having those resources in one place would be useful. Things like that.
Good. Thank you, Luke. So are you done with your report for this item?
Yeah, I'm done with my awesome. Done with my report. Thank you all. That was very helpful. I think we have a lot of direction to act on now. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. All right. So we'll move along. Any member comments and announcements regarding matters not on the agenda? Oh, I have an announcement. So the Los Angeles County Sanitation District has partnered with Metropolitan Water District on the Pure Water Southern California project. Yesterday was the release of the draft EIR, so it's a big milestone for us. The 60-day comment period started, so comments are due mid-July. And the goal will be to review those comments, develop response to comments, and hopefully the final EIR would be out for release by the end of the year with potential adoption from Metropolitan on their end. And then after Metropolitan adopts, the sanitation districts would adopt for our purposes. So we're really excited about this. So I will send Luke the link for access to the draft EIR in case you're interested. At the end of the year, we'll be asking for letters of support. So I'll definitely remind you all once that happens. But, you know, in the meantime, if you have a chance to review it, have any comments for us, please, you know, let us know.
Any other folks or events coming up?
All right. If not, then our next meeting is scheduled. The governing board meeting is scheduled to meet June 12th again here at the Delray Yacht Club. The next executive meeting will be July 17th at 10 a.m. at Hyperion's Los Angeles Environmental Learning Center. We have no closed session, and unless anyone has any closing comments. I want to say thank you for taking time to come to this meeting. You know, we understand you're really busy, but we really appreciate your input, your engagement. And I guess we can adjourn at 11:49. Thank you.